few weeks ago, Mark O'Connell, Jerry DeShane, and I talked about the start of the 2018 Legislative Council Interim Study Committees. Today, we're going to find out what that means. Hi, and welcome to Hashtag Local Gov Matters. I'm Gwen Gunther, president of the Wheeler Report. I want to share some exciting news before we start today's podcast. Your Rice Lake Radio 105.5 FM will start airing Hashtag Local Gov Matters every Thursday at 11 a.m. I'm very excited about this new partnership with Your Rice Lake Radio. Hello to everyone in the Rice Lake area. Today, I'm joined by Terry Anderson, the director of the Wisconsin Legislative Council. Welcome, Terry.
Hi, Gwen.
So, what is the Legislative Council? Who works there? What do you guys do?
Right. The Legislative Council is one of five nonpartisan service agencies that supports the legislature here in Wisconsin. The others being, that you may have heard of, the Fiscal Bureau, the Reference Bureau, and then we have the Audit Bureau, Technology Service Bureau. But the council itself has two major missions. One is providing legal assistance to the standing committees and the individual members of the legislature, but also conducting special studies that are focused on specific problems between the various legislative sessions.
So is Wisconsin unique in this? Are we the only ones that have a legislative council? Do other states have something similar to what you guys do?
Many states have legislative councils. Wisconsin has had one since 1947. Our office has been in existence since then. And the movement actually began in Oklahoma to have legislative councils. And it was two reasons that legislatures got into this. One, there was a lack of professional staff available to legislators, and there was a need to build that up to strengthen the legislative branch. But then also, legislatures back in the 30s and 40s were coming to town after the election, passing a budget, maybe meeting for 30 to 40 days, going home, and legislators wouldn't return to the Capitol again until after another election. And in that year and a half space there that they weren't in town, the governors were free to do as they pleased. And they did.
Without legislative oversight.
Correct. And so the legislatures decided they wanted to play a more active role in government. So Oklahoma started with the first council, and the movement swept right up through the center of the country. And all of those states, Kansas, Nebraska, the Dakotas, all picked up their own legislative councils, and then it branched out east and west and went all over the country. Today, if you go back and look at what states still maintain a legislative council, you'll find it predominantly in the West, in the Midwest, also in the New England states that still do this staffing structure and study committee process. The study committees were designed to give them, the legislators, a chance to come into the Capitol when they weren't in session. So there was a large problem they couldn't address during a very compressed legislative session. They would have these meetings sporadically between the meetings of the legislature and hopefully come back with a solution that either that legislature could look at later in its time frame or the next legislature would receive that solution, and on we'd go.
So kind of the opportunity to say, Governor, we're still here, we're still keeping an eye on you, we're co-equal branches of government here, and then the opportunity for legislators to say, you know, this is something that we've talked about, let's really delve into this rather than just one piece of legislation, let's find out who else is looking at this stuff.
Right.
It's very interesting. Now, I know I interact with legislative council, and I see them the most visible whenever I go to a committee in the building because they staff and they provide legal services and help non-lawyers understand some of the statutes and how they're written and some of those things. Are all of your staff lawyers?
Not quite. The vast majority are. I am not, for instance. My degree is in political science. We have an analyst on staff that has a master's in business administration. But beyond that, all others are lawyers.
So what is their function when they're in the committee other than to just give, statutes? Do you work with legislators behind the scenes to give them legal advice on their bills or help them understand the statutes? What do you do with that?
Right. Within within the committee, not only the explaining of how the bill would change Wisconsin law, but also we are there for parliamentary procedure to make sure that the committees follow good parliamentary procedure and adopt their actions properly as well. But outside of the committee, the staff is very involved one-on-one with legislators. We assist them when they come in with the idea of that they may need to put in a bill. How do they go about doing that? Lots of times, ideas for bills can come on the back of a cocktail napkin or in a formal letter. But the legislator is very understanding of constituent services, because I mean that's what an elected official has to go through elections, so they deal with the people in their district, but they're not always real familiar with the process, and government is big on process and big on bureaucracy, and then you take the legislative branch has its own language, has its own adopted methods for doing business. So frequently, these legislators will call in a member of the Ledge Council staff and say, okay, these constituents are coming to town in a week. I need to meet with them. We want to correct this problem that's happening in the district. Maybe it can be corrected by a visit to an executive department or an administrative rule, but maybe it will take a bill. And so the member of my staff is there to help them find out what is the most efficient way to solve their problem. And then if it's a bill, we would give them some ideas for what should be in that bill so that when they go to the Legislative Reference Bureau, they can then hand that document off to the drafter and get a bill that does what they want to do.
Wow. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the study committees and how they're structured and how those work.
The Wisconsin Counties Association represents Wisconsin's 72 counties at both the state and federal level. Learn more about how counties impact your community at wicounties.org.
When I started covering the legislature in 1995, one of the things that I was sent to cover were the interim study committees. What are the study committees? How are they designed? I mean, where do the ideas for this come? What's the background on them?
When we talk about the Legislative Council, it not only is a state agency, but it's also a joint committee of the legislature made up of 22 members, which includes every leader in the legislature, including the co-chairs of finance, the ranking minority of finance, and then some additional appointees on top of that. That group of 22 makes the real selection as to what topics will be studied. So what are the study committees and how do they differ from standing committees? Standing committees are made up of legislators only. Standing committees are given bills in the legislature to have public hearings on and to ultimately act on. Study committees, and Wisconsin is unique in the entire United States this way, our study committees are a mixture of legislators and citizens knowledgeable in the problem. All of those people around the table in our study committees have equal votes. And so you say, well, how can a non-elected official participate in the legislative process? We don't give a study committee a bill. The study committee is given a problem. The end result of their summer of working on this is hopefully a bill that solves that problem.
And you give them their problem in the terms of a scope statement. This is what we want you to focus on when you talk.
And that scope statement is designed and approved by that 22-member council. So the legislative leadership is saying, here is a problem we have. Here's the definition of that problem. Now, tell us what is the best way to solve that problem.
I mean, legislators all year long say, well, let's have a committee on this. Let's have a committee
right.
on that.
Right.
There are 9, I think, study committees
right.
this year, usually
right.
somewhere around 9, 10, 11
right.
study committees in an interim session.
Mm-hmm.
How many study committees are recommended in a year?
We get input on anywhere from 60 to 100 suggestions, and we do these studies between the biennium, so we just do them every other year in the even-numbered year. And those suggestions come from all over the legislature.
So how do you go from 100 suggestions down to 9 committees?
The co-chairs of the council, which are by statute the Speaker of the Assembly and the President of the Senate, or their designee, and in the current case, we have the President of the Senate, Senator Roth, that is serving as co-chair from there. Speaker Voss has chosen Representative Rob Brooks, the Assembly Assistant Majority Leader, to serve as their co-chair. Those two individuals review all that we get in, and they develop, if you will, a short list. And that short list is quite well vetted, and the scope for that, how it would read, is very well defined. So you're looking at all those words and making sure you're very clear. Then that is what goes out to the full 22 members for their approval of the council.
And just a couple weeks ago, we had the list go out and the ballot come back saying these are the committees. Now legislators have to be assigned to those committees, and you have to get citizens on those committees. Right. How does that process work?
Of course, we survey the legislators, and they can tell us which ones they're interested in. And the co-chairs, again, will select from that. We try to make study committees be very balanced. So there isn't really a political majority in a subcommittee. Most of our subcommittees, not all, but most of them, are chaired by the majority and vice-chaired by the minority. And then we have representatives from each of the four caucuses. In a perfect committee, if you will, we have one Senate Democrat, one Senate Republican, one Assembly Republican, one Assembly Democrat, or equal numbers. And then added to that are the citizen members. Those come in from all over the state. They come from many of our colleges and universities send in nominees, interest groups, citizens groups from around that see that list and say, oh, you're doing a study on dyslexia. We have a very knowledgeable member of our faculty on that topic, or we have a parent that has been very active in that. So they send in a letter of interest, said, I'd like to be on this committee with a resume. The co-chairs go through all of those. And our committees, we attempt to have between 9 and 14 or 16, 15, somewhere in there, as the maximum of our committees.
So once that gets set, then they start holding hearings. And these are public hearings. They're publicly noticed according to all the statutes. And, I mean, anybody can come in and sit and watch what happens. And normally the first one, you always come in and welcome everyone and tell them how the process works. And then they'll start talking. Usually a legislator will lead it and say, okay, let's talk about this issue. And as the summer goes on, it goes from talking about the issue to bringing in more experts to talk about the issues to then starting to talk about legislation. What happens with, they make proposals that come out of these committees. What happens when the committee's done?
And that's why you can have non-legislators participating in this process and not violating the elected legislative branch, if you will, because the work product, the final bill that the committee adopts and recommends, goes then not to the legislature, but it goes to that Joint Legislative Council, that 22 legislative leaders. They will meet next year, in February, probably, typically, February, maybe March. They will hear each committee's reports and see each committee's bill recommendations. If they feel that that bill that's being recommended is an answer to the problem that they were given and that the committee just didn't wander off to something else, they'll take that bill and they will introduce it. So the work product of all of our committees goes into the next legislature, and each one is introduced by, and you won't see individual names on it, you'll see introduced by the Joint Legislative Council.
Right, exactly.
And then it goes through the normal process, and that's where the public hearing can be held, and then it's legislators only from that point on.
One thing that you and I have talked about in the past is people say how many of those legislative council bills get passed.
Right.
And it's hard to calculate that because they're not always done as bills. Some of them are put into the budget. Some of them are part of other packages. Do you have a sense of...
Again, you're right. It depends on how you look at it, changes that number. Overall number, you can say with quite confidence, I can tell you that between 70 and 80% of the recommendations from these committees get implemented in some manner by the next legislature.
Really?
But our 2016 set of committees probably introduced between 20 and 30 pieces of legislation. And if you look at how many pieces were signed by the governor, you probably are somewhere around 6 out of those 20. But then if you go back and look how many of the recommendations were incorporated into the large budget document that was adopted,
mm-hmm.
many of them.
Right.
How many were picked up by a different legislator and they put their name on a slightly different bill and it passed, you get up to the 70-80%.
When I think of the 2016 process, I think of rural broadband as
being
one of those
example.
Issues that several recommendations were come out, but some of those were part of the budget. Some of those were part of legislative bills that were that had different changes in different things.
Correct.
So, yeah.
Correct.
So it's very interesting. All right. So when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the committees that I remember and some changes that we've seen in the process a little bit.
The League of Wisconsin Municipalities advocates for Wisconsin's 600 cities and villages, speaking up for local democracy and common-sense citizen-led government. Learn more at lwm-info.org.
So some of the committees that I remember, specifically in 1996, I remember sitting through school funding. That is how I learned how schools are funded in Wisconsin. The 1998 schedule, how we set the school calendar. 2006, the placement of sex offenders, which is still an issue today that we're dealing with. 2006, the review of school state aid funding. It seems like we do a lot of them on schools. 2010, infant mortality, which was a very large issue in the Racine and Kenosha area, I remember coming forward. 2012, 9/11 communications, which is, again, something that we're still dealing with as technology changes. More things continue to come forward. 2016, the shortage of volunteer EMTs and firefighters, which we actually did a earlier podcast on some of the results from that committee. And then, as I said, the 2016 rural broadband. What are some of the committees that stick out in your mind?
Well, if you go back into the council history, in addition to those that you mentioned, which is a real good list to show you how it's the controversial things that get handed off to study committees, not the easy solved problems. But the court, our current court structure was developed through the study committee process in a court reorganization study.
Really? When was that done?
That was done in the early 1960s.
Wow.
That was done. The marital property laws that we did, all of those were developed. The groundwater, laws were all, started through that. Lead-based paint that we heard a lot about, the problems with lead in paint, that was solved through our study committee process along with medical malpractice. So it tends to be big things that are, again, hard to solve when you've got the crush of all the legislation going on in little time. Remember, our study committees will meet starting in June and go to to the end of December. So they will meet probably 4 to 6 times, and not just for an hour or two, for full days.
Right. It's funny that you bring up the lead paint, because that's one of those things where you know that you bring in people from the university and doing research, because I remember sitting in that committee and someone from Michigan came in and said that they found that there are plants and bushes that you can plant next to places that have lead that will absorb the lead out of the ground. And I don't know why I remember that, but I distinctly remember that. What are some of the committees that are coming up for the 2018 session?
We really have an interesting collection this year of varied study committees. As I mentioned earlier, we had a study on how dyslexia is dealt with in our school systems. We also have one on bail conditions and pretrial releases, minor guardianships. We'll have on that child placement and support. Property tax assessment practices, which is the title of our committee, and that's the subject they'll be talking about. The shorthand that we hear talked about a lot now is the dark store question.
Dark stores. Will they be addressing the Walgreens decision at all in that committee, or just dark stores?
They'll certainly be bringing that information into it, yes. And the police body cameras, some police departments, this is not a study that's going to say all police must wear body cameras. This is a study that's saying many police departments are starting to use body cameras in very volatile and difficult situations. They are public employees. Their data is a public record. So when they are called to a domestic dispute and, for instance, are recording, is that data then a public record that any of us can go look at? Or need we have policies that regulate how open that body camera data is beyond the police departments?
I would especially think when they're dealing with children, this would be an issue because it's a minor, and the rules on records with children are very different than the records for adults.
So a good way to look at that study is we're looking at how does body camera data from the law enforcement square with our open records law and all of our rights to know what's going on in government.
Interesting.
You know, so that's the balance.
There's one study committee that is a standing committee that never goes away and is always brought up, and that's the State Tribal Relations Committee.
Correct.
How is that different?
It is different because it, as you say, it is statutory, so it is ongoing. It is always done regardless of what the 22 members of the council wish for it. It is a permanent thing to establish state tribal relations and deal with things that are, those are two very distinct entities of government that need to work together, and this is a mechanism for them to do that. The membership on that is very unique. The citizen membership on that comes from the tribal nominees. Each tribe in our state is entitled to have one member of their tribe on this state tribal council. Those are the citizen members, and then the legislators are appointed, as our other study committees are, by the Joint Legislative Council. They typically don't meet as much this time of year because they are ongoing, and they will meet more when the legislature comes back in January. But their legislative recommendations take the same course as any of the other committees. The council ultimately becomes the author of those bills.
When the session is all done, does the joint council have to meet and disband the committees? How do they officially end?
Well, the committees officially end really at the beginning of the next biennium when the council said, okay, committees, we're ready for your reports. What are your recommendations? And when the council sets their dates and gets the report, they say, you're going to report to us on this, at this meeting. Then when they've reported, their work is done.
Okay.
Other than the leadership of those special study committees are the people that help shepherd the bills through the legislative process. The citizen members are thanked for their services and invited to come back if they want to hear the public hearing. Many of them do come back if their recommendations are signed into law for the signing ceremony, and they enjoy that. They get their pen from the governor and feel that
everybody
really
wants a pen. One of the things that I've noticed in the past couple sessions is that you guys have really bulked up your website in presenting all of that information that they do in those committees, making the proposals available. Anybody is welcome to go onto your website. All of the committee notices are on there. All of the proposals that are being advanced, all of the members of each committee and their information are there. And then if people want to submit information to the committee, they can do that right through your website, correct?
On the study committees, most of the information that goes to the committees comes through our office and is presented at the committee meetings. Now, what we don't do is we don't take public testimony at study committees. It's invited testimony. It tends to be expert witness kind of testimony.
So if people want input on the committee, but they are not invited to be a speaker, is there a way that they can get information to the members of that committee?
Well, of course, they can attend the meetings, and they can certainly interact with the members there. The contact information for all members of the committee can be found at our website as well, and they're free to write to them or call them and talk to them. But we would not put, like, if they wanted to write some testimony, as you do, like, during the session for standing committees, we welcome their written testimony and put all of that
on the website.
But we don't do that for the study committees because it's more, again, it's solving a problem, not reacting to a bill.
So if people are interested, they should contact the organizations that they know are on there.
Correct.
They could contact the county's association. They could contact the municipalities if they have somebody serving on those
Absolutely.
Committees.
Absolutely. That's a very excellent way through it. Use that association contact. That's what the citizen members are there for. They are representing, hopefully, the part of the issue or the problem that they're very knowledgeable in.
Right. There are mixed responses to these committees by different people, but I love them. I love learning everything that comes out of them. You meet people all over the state, and I find out things that I never knew before. I really want to thank you for coming and joining
us,
Terry.
That's great.
And as always, all of the documents discussed in today's podcast are available on the Wheeler Report blog, and we will definitely link to your website so
Wonderful.
People know how to find all of that information. And I want to thank the Counties Association and the League of Wisconsin Municipalities for their continued collaboration on hashtag local gov matters. And make sure if you're in Rice Lake, you're listening to us on 105.5 FM.